That way you could hear my angelic voice a little better. And why are you laughing? No. Okay, this talk, I've given this talk in one form or another. I started giving it about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and nobody knew what I was talking about, but it's even more important today than it was then, and so I continue to give this talk. And I actually think there's a lot of Christian thinkers who are trying to win a debate that unfortunately we lost. You know, you don't always lose a debate because you're defending falsehood. You could have the truth and still lose the debate if people don't want to hear the truth. And so unfortunately, a lot of Christian thinkers are still acting like we're in the moral relativistic stage, okay? And I think we're beyond that right now, okay? And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to write something on the board. We went from a stage in America from God's moral absolutes. Not everybody was a Christian, okay? But enough of our founding fathers acknowledged the Christian worldview, so they built the American government on the biblical worldview. And so we based our government and our laws on God's moral absolutes. Then we entered a stage where there was no absolutes, okay? What's right for you is right for you. It doesn't have to be right for me and vice versa, okay? Those days are gone. Most Christian thinkers today are still arguing in yesterday's debate. We are no longer, and many of the enemies of Christianity consider themselves moral relativists, but they're really not. They've got a set of new moral absolutes, okay? And until the church recognizes that, we're going to lose today's debate because we still think we're debating in yesterday's debate, okay? See, it used to be your neighbor, when we were in the stage of no absolutes, your neighbor would say, well, you know, you're a Christian. Well, that's good for you. That's true for you. And you like living a Christian lifestyle, and that's good. If that's good for you, I'm happy for you, but I'm into different stuff, okay? But I'm really happy for you, and I want to encourage you on your Christianity. That's not what's happening anymore, okay? We got some seats over here, and I think some of these Christians on this side don't bite, so... and there's also chairs next door. If you want to bring in some chairs, you can just kind of grab a chair and move it over. That would be great. It's really encouraging, because when you look at some of the speakers and stuff like that, I'm always wondering if I'm just going to just stand here and there's only going to be like one guy, and it's going to be the one guy who always asks questions all the time. Or he's just going to raise his hand. I'll say, any questions, raise his hand. And are you Dr. John Morris? I'll say, no, I'm Phil Francis. I'll say, oh, sorry, I'm in the wrong room. So it's great to see people here and stuff. But as I was saying, we've gone from God's moral absolutes to no absolutes to new moral absolutes. So now people, they're not saying, well, I'm glad you're a Christian, that's good for you, but it's not true or good for me. Now they're saying, you're a Christian? You're one of those intolerant bigots? You see, all of a sudden there's new absolutes where homosexuality is not just like an alternative lifestyle. It's homosexuality, you know, forget about it. Here, homosexuality was a sin. Here, it's just a person's preference. And now that's a wholesome, a positively wholesome lifestyle. But if you're a Christian, you are an intolerant bigot. Don't you realize that Christianity is one of the major causes for all the wars in the history of mankind? You know, that's the way it's viewed. So we have the new morality. I recommend the book by William Watkins by that same title, The New Morality, okay? Where you can look at what the old moral law was, and then you look at the new absolutes that are being proclaimed. Okay? Isaiah 5:20. The prophet Isaiah tells us, "Woe to those who call good evil and evil good." Those are the days in which we live. Very few people are saying there's no such thing as right and wrong. I mean, they say it in a philosophical debate, but during that same philosophical debate, they'll talk about how dangerous it is to have so many Christians, and if we could just get more and more atheists, then the world will live happily ever after. If you don't believe me, my last debate against Jim Corbett, the president of Humanists of Washington, you could download for free the audio of that debate. I think they called it the case for the creator or something, but it's my debate against Jim Corbett. And over and over again, he says, no such thing as right and wrong, but over and over again, he says, the world will be a better place to live when everybody evolves to the point where we're all atheists. And it's like, where do you get the word better? If there's no such thing as good and evil, there's no such thing as better. Okay? I had one guy in the audience telling me, I was really offended at what you said, because you said something about atheism that was absolutely false. And I never knew what it was that I said that offended him, because I never let him go that far. I said, excuse me, sir, before I answer your question, do you believe in absolute truth? And he said, well, no. And I said, okay, well, then whatever I said, it can't be absolutely false. There's no absolute truth. And it was sad. I had to repeat it like 3 or 4 times, because he was the only guy in the whole audience that didn't get it. And he looked like a philosophy professor. You know, I don't know what philosophy professors look like, but he looked like that. I don't look like a philosophy professor, and I don't sound like one. And maybe that's why I win my debates. Maybe the guys think, you know, oh, this guy's an idiot. Sounds like a cab driver from Jersey. And so it's like halfway through my opening statement where it clicks. Oh, no, I better pay attention. This guy's sharp, you know. But whatever the case, I thought the guy was a philosophy professor, so I was kind of hard on him, and it turned out he wasn't. I think he was just a student. So I felt kind of bad for the guy. But that's the way the world, they say, you know, there's no such thing as right and wrong. But then they'll tell you that certain things are absolutely right, and the Bible usually calls them wrong. And certain things are absolutely wrong, and the Bible usually calls them right. And so we live in a day of new absolutes. The new tolerance, there's a book by Josh McDowell and Bob Hostetler. Got to pick up that book. And he's updated his stuff beyond that, but he's got a book, The New Tolerance. You want to look into that. See, what's happened now is the traditional tolerance meant freedom of religion and freedom of speech. Okay? Let's say you're on the work site, and you work with a born-again Christian, and you work with a fundamentalist Muslim. Okay? And you show up for work one day, and they're screaming at each other. They're like 10 feet apart. They're not going to hit each other, and they're not really screaming at each other, but they're just telling each other. The Christian guy's saying, you're going to hell if you don't accept Jesus. And the Muslim guy says, and by the way, I don't recommend you witness that way, and the Muslim guy says, no, you're going to hell because you won't submit to Muhammad, Allah's greatest prophet. Okay? What's the first thing that would come to our minds? We would walk in that room and we would say, boy, those guys are intolerant. We're being programmed to think that way. We shouldn't. We should walk in and say, man, this is a great country. Look at how we tolerate each other. We actually have the freedom of speech and freedom of religion to tell our neighbors, if they don't accept our religion, they're going to hell. Okay? That's freedom. That's a good thing. But now everything has been twisted and turned around. So traditional tolerance meant freedom of religion, freedom of speech. Now the new tolerance means that all beliefs are equally true and all behavior is equally wholesome. Oh, and by the way, if you disagree with us, we can't tolerate you. In fact, you should be caged up like animals or sent to re-indoctrination camps, okay? That's not tolerance, okay? Here's the way most of us argue. Well, I can't speak for you, but most of the Christian thinkers that I see on television there's not a few many on television, but that I hear on the radio, the way they argue is really counterproductive. Because you often hear them saying things like, well, America was founded as a Christian country, and we were a Christian culture, and yeah, we were, but I mean, why bring that up now? But whatever the case, they bring that up, and they say, we don't tolerate homosexuality in this country and all this other stuff because we were founded on biblical principles and blah, blah, blah. And you know what it looks like? It implies that we're in charge, that we're calling the shots, and we are these intolerant people who have all the political power, okay? And that's exactly the way the enemy, our opposition, is portraying us. We're actually pretending to be the stereotype, you know, that they label us with. Let me tell you, this is no longer a Christian country. So why do we argue like it is? This is not a Christian culture anymore. We Christians need to wake up and smell the coffee. Okay? We need to stop talking like we're in charge. If we're in charge, how come our money goes to finance through taxation the public schools? And then if we want to give our children a good Christian education, we either have to homeschool them on the side or pay thousands of dollars to put them in a Christian school. If you want your kid to be trained in neo-paganism or atheism, fine. The government will do it for free after taxing us. But you still have to pay for that anti-Christian propaganda, and then you got to pay on top of that if you want your kid to get a Christian education. We're not in charge. We don't control the media. We don't control the universities. Most of the great universities in this country were founded by Christians to train ministers of the gospel. Those days are gone. So why don't we just admit it? And I'm not saying that America's through. If God wants revival, he'll get revival. Okay? But if he doesn't miraculously intervene, boy, things are looking really bad. But I think the way I argue. Because instead of looking like this intolerant bigot that they make us out to be, like we're trying to control everybody's lives, you know, and we want to station a Christian police officer, fundamentalist Christian police officer in everybody's bedroom to legislate our morality. That's the way they make us sound. And guess what? When we debate, we sound like that. Okay? Why not take this approach? I mean, by the way, it's like everybody, you know, everybody wants to be a victim now and then. Okay? Well, we're the ones that are being victimized more than anybody else. Why not turn it on them? Okay? Why not say, well, you know, this is what I tell guys. I say, hey, you guys won. They say, what? I said, you guys won. I mean, this isn't a Christian culture. It's probably not even a secular culture anymore. It's more of a neo-pagan culture. But you guys won. You control the schools, the media. I mean, the law. I mean, you guys won. Okay? And maybe someday Christians will win it back. I don't know. But you guys won. You guys are in control now. And you claim to be tolerant. And you talk about tolerance all the time. So I want to ask you this. Can you tolerate me as a preacher when Sunday mornings I get behind a pulpit and I call homosexuality a sin? Because that's what the Bible teaches that it is. It's a sin. Can you tolerate my freedom of speech and my freedom of religion when I call homosexuality a sin? Can you tolerate the freedom of religion, freedom of speech of an elderly lady in my congregation who might own a home? And she refuses to rent it to practicing homosexuals. Can you tolerate her freedom of speech or freedom of religion? Because if you can't, what you're telling me is you can only tolerate people who agree with you. And traditionally, that's the definition of intolerance. Okay? You see, tolerance is their God. If I had to give a name for the New World Religion, the fastest growing religion on the planet Earth, and you don't sign up, it's not an official religion, I would call it the New Tolerance. Okay? That is their God. And when you show them how intolerant they are, they don't like it. In Kitsap County, we have I'm from Bremerton, and I'm sure you all have heard of Bremerton, but so this is kind of, for instance, the Bill of Defense, this is kind of like our world tour. When we come across the water, we take the ferry, over there, Kitsap County, they had this human rights council, and Ellen, how many people remember Ellen Krasel ran for governor, a real godly friend of mine, real godly Christian lady? Well, her son, Jim Krasel, was one of two Christians, him and Mick Sheldon, on this Human Rights Council of 12 people. And the other 10 were just anti-Christians. And they were fighting for Christian, the Jim Krasel, Mick Sheldon fighting for Christian rights. And the anti-Christians were trying to get homosexual agenda into the public schools and trying to slam Christians for hate crimes and all this. They would always ask me to go to the council meetings to speak up for the evangelical perspective. And I went the first few times willingly, but after a while I said, man, I said, I don't want to go to those anymore, because they were people writing letters to the editor about Institute of Biblical Defense is a hate organization and he's guilty of hate speech. This trans guy is the evilest man who ever lived and, you know, makes Darth Vader look like a puppy dog or whatever. And you know, being from New Jersey, being half Italian, you know, I'm a sensitive guy. But whatever the case, so I told them, you know, hey, you know, I don't want to go. And they'd say, no, come on, somebody's got to speak up for the evangelical position. One of every three people in Kitsap County claims to be evangelical. Just go. And so I'd go and speak up on them. People would heckle. They'd boo me. And then there'd be all letters from the editor. And I hope people would read the names, because it was always the same four guys. And they'd each write three letters to the editor a month slamming me. And it was just real ugly. But one day, Jim Krasel called me up. Mick Sheldon had already resigned. He just, you know, he just did all he could do and moved on. Jim Krasel was the only Christian left out of 12 council members. And he said, Phil, I need you to go and speak up for me. You know, they want to kick me off the council. They said, if I don't resign this Tuesday night, the four most vocal members of the council are going to resign. And he said, I think it's beyond hope. They're going to probably force me to resign. But if you could at least put in a good word for me. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, praise God, Jim, you're finally going to get away from that group of people. But he talked me into going and speaking up for him. So I went, and it was standing room only. The place seated like 60 people. It was like 120 people. And they were all cheering and all the same. You know, every time somebody said something anti-Christian, the whole crowd cheered. And I was a little intimidated. And it just worked out that I was the last one to speak. God just worked it out that way. So I got up there to speak. And it was looking really bad for Jim Krasel at this point. So I got up to speak. And I said, well, I consider myself a very, very tolerant person. And everybody started laughing and heckling and laughing. And so I waited for it to die down. And I said, as I was saying, I consider myself a very tolerant person. And then they just heckled and laughed again. And so I just waited. And when it died down, I said it a third time. But this time, they were losing their patience. And I thought, just let Fernandez talk, and we'll all get out of here before the rooster crows, you know. And so I said, as I was saying, I consider myself a very tolerant person. I'm an evangelical Christian. I represent one out of every three people in Kitsap County. And there's only one person on this council that represents us, one out of 12. Yet, I'm not asking for any of these 11 people to resign from this council today. And so what I'm asking is that the council would be 1/12 as tolerant as I am, and allow the one person who speaks for one out of every three people in Kitsap County to remain on the council. Thank you. And I sat down. You could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet. I was the last speaker, so then they had to have their little three-minute discussion, and then the four people resigned from the council. Because, see, the only way they could have still kicked him off, Jim Krasel off, they would have had to have admitted that they were 1/12 as tolerant as Fernandez, who's always guilty of hate speech because he's a Christian, okay? See, and this is the issue. We have to expose how intolerant the new tolerance is, okay? I tell you, you know, and this, the new tolerance has spread to religious pluralism. The idea that all faiths lead to God. So if you believe salvation is only through Jesus, you're an intolerant bigot. Let me tell you, I'm not just talking about CNN here, or ABC and NBC. Even Fox News Network suffers from this. A lot of Christians say, oh, Fox News, they're on our side. Well, not always. I remember Sean Hannity, Irish Catholic. Bill O'Reilly, Irish Catholic. Shortly after 9/11, okay, one was interviewing Jerry Falwell from, you know, Liberty University, Baptist minister. Another one was interviewing the gentleman who at that time was the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. And during the interviews, an Irish Catholic, supposed to be a conservative, and another Irish Catholic, supposed to be a conservative, on different occasions, interviewing these different guys, they said, well, you don't believe that people have to believe like you believe to go to heaven, that everybody else is going to hell, do you? And God bless him, Jerry Falwell and the president of the Southern Baptist Convention on different programs, on different days, shortly after 9/11, said, yes, salvation is through faith in Jesus alone. There is no other way for us to be saved. Do you know that they both, it wasn't scripted or anything, but both Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly both responded by saying, well, don't you realize that that puts you in the same classification, in the same class with Osama bin Laden? You see what's happened? The new tolerance is so prevalent, it's on both sides of the aisle, Democrat and Republican right now. We need to recognize that, why is Osama bin Laden a bad guy, politically speaking? Obviously, because he's not a Christian, he's not trusted in Jesus, you know, he's hellbound. Only salvation is only through Jesus. But politically speaking, the reason why he's a bad guy is not because he believes you have to believe like him, have to join his religion to go to heaven. That's not what makes him, politically speaking, a bad guy. What makes him a bad guy is he wants to blow up anybody who disagrees with him. Okay? Last I heard, Jerry Falwell has still yet to kill an innocent human being. And the same goes for any president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay? So if we're gonna slam Osama bin Laden, slam him for the right reason. He's a terrorist. He's a cold-blooded murderer. But as a human being, he has the right to believe that salvation is only through his religion. See, God gave us free choice. And but whatever the case, this is the number one attack on the Christian worldview today. If you go to Ivy League schools, they are not arguing that Christianity is false. They're not arguing that Christianity is irrational. The argument is Christianity is intolerant. Tolerance is everything. When I had a debate, Elliot Ratzman at Princeton University on the issue, does the Christian God exist? And so, the only reason why, I never heard of Elliot Ratzman. Usually when I debate a guy, he's written 10 books. I just get to read his books to prepare for it. Very rarely do I debate a guy who hasn't written a book, because then I don't know where he's coming from. But this I had to accept, because it was a free ticket to New Jersey for me and my wife. So I got to visit the family and stuff, you know. But I was on Princeton. I made them fly me out a few days before, fly me back a few days after. So I got to spend some time at home. I said, you don't even have to pay for a motel. I'll stay at my dad's house. But I'm traveling all over the campus. I'm looking through directories. I can't find Campus Crusade for Christ. So finally somebody told me, Agape Fellowship, they're good guys. You know, agape means Greek word for love, unconditional love. So I thought, all right, that's cool, you know. So I got with this guy. His last name was Edwards. Turned out to be a direct descendant of Jonathan Edwards, who was affiliated with Princeton years ago. Great preacher and stuff. This guy came unsaved to Princeton and got saved there by people from Agape Fellowship. We prayed in a room where Einstein taught. We got done praying, and I told this young man, this Edwards guy, I said, hey, you know, I really appreciate this. You Agape Fellowship people are good people, but where's Campus Crusade for Christ? How could Bill Bright miss Princeton? You know, I mean, it's a pretty big dot on the map there, you know? And he looked around, made sure nobody's listening. He said, don't tell anybody, but we're Campus Crusade for Christ. And I was like, you know, Bill Bright, you guys have worked so hard for so long to get a good name, and you've led multitudes to Christ. Why be ashamed of your name, Campus Crusade for Christ? He said, we're not ashamed of our name. But in Ivy League schools, whenever you mention the word Christianity, all people think is the Crusades and the Inquisition. As soon as we mention the word crusade, immediately these people are programmed to think, oh, just another intolerant Christian. And so they had to change their name to Agape Fellowship because nobody knew what that meant. Then they say, what does agape mean? It's the Greek word for love. Wow, that sounds tolerant. They might listen. They might listen to me now, you know. But see, that's how bad the new tolerance is so bad, Campus Crusade for Christ has to change their name at Ivy League schools. Okay? So, whatever the case, Christianity, here's what they teach about Christianity schools. They talk about all the hospitals Christians built, the orphanages we built. They talk about all the good effect that Christianity has had, positive effect on man's laws and government. And no, it's just the Inquisition, the Crusades, the Salem witch trials, the Holocaust. They like to say how Hitler was baptized as a Roman Catholic. Well, big deal. So was I. Okay, I'm not a Roman Catholic anymore. Martin Luther, he was baptized as a Roman Catholic. Does that make him a Roman Catholic? Okay? I mean, if I had a dime for everybody in New Jersey who was baptized as a Roman Catholic, I'd be a rich man right now. Okay? So Christianity's been blamed for all the world's problems and wars. And, gee, we could get world peace if these Christians would just go away. Okay? By the way, the new tolerance, you know, CNN will be doing a report about, you know, Islamic fundamentalists blow up 14 school children in an Israeli school. Another piece of news, Christian fundamentalist Jerry Falwell takes a stand against, you know, and they love sticking in almost the same sentence, Islamic fundamentalist, Christian fundamentalist. Islamic fundamentalist, Christian fundamentalist, to the point where we think that, you know, Jerry Falwell's blowing up people or something. He's like, and let me tell you, we have been so dumbed down in the indoctrination of the new tolerance. It used to be that whoever mastered the soundbite wins the debate. You know, in these presidential elections, you know, if you get a guy up there convincing you that he feels your pain and dropping a tear at the right point, he automatically wins the election. Okay, it's beyond soundbites now. Our culture is so dumbed down. This is systematic, too. I mean, educators know how to educate. When you pour billions of dollars into our education system and they're failing to educate, it's because they're not trying to educate. They're trying to indoctrinate. Okay? And now I'm losing my train of thought here. I forgot what my point was going to be. It'll come back to anybody know what I was talking about? Oh, our culture, yeah, very, thank you. See, that's and that's a good illustration of how dumbed down our culture is. We can't even remember what our last point was. Thank you. Thank you for remembering that and humiliating me at the same time. Where's the nearest exit? No, we're so dumbed down. Now it's just, all you have to do is control the titles. Forget about a 20-second soundbite. Our attention span, as I demonstrated so well, our attention span is even less than 20 seconds, okay? So, I mean, we're being systematically dumbed down. This is why I'm so pro-homeschooling and good, solid Christian education. We're being so dumbed down that it's to the point, if you just control the title, you've won the debate. Do you know that we're not pro-lifers? There's no such thing as pro-lifers. Just watch CNN. We're anti-abortionists. Why are we anti-abortion? Because Americans don't like the prefix anti, and they don't like the word abortion. Most polls show people don't like abortion. So we're anti-abortionists because it sounds intolerant. And the pro-abortionists, are they pro-abortionists? No, they're pro-choice. What American would be opposed to choice? Okay? So, you know, whatever the case, all you have to do now is control the... If you control the media... And you control the titles, you know. I mean, we're getting to the point. I even do this. Well, of course, sometimes we do it just because we don't have time. But we just read the titles. You don't even read the articles anymore. Just read the titles. But when everything's said and done, you control the titles. You win the debate. But what about the Inquisition? Okay, the first thing I respond to about the Inquisition, okay. That was called by the Roman Catholic Church. Were they persecuting? They were putting Jews on the racks. For not submitting to the Bishop of Rome. But they were also putting people like me and you on the racks for not submitting to the Bishop of Rome. Why should I have to apologize when if I lived back then, I'd be one of the guys on the torture rack. Okay? Because I agree with Martin Luther and John Calvin. This is the ultimate authority, the Word of God, not some bishop of Rome. Okay? So let me hold up the Bible again so James can get a good picture. I'll pretend I'm talking. He walked in. You walked in 1 second too late, brother. But whatever the case, you know, the Inquisition, do we really have to apologize for what the Bishop of Rome ordered? Do we really, if you're not Roman Catholic, you don't believe he infallibly speaks for the church? Okay, that's number one. Number two, the Roman Catholics are getting a bad rap there because the numbers are blown way out of proportion. Yes, there's probably somewhere between, 60 and 100,000 people put to death over four centuries for their religious beliefs through the Inquisition. But just compare that to the numbers of innocent deaths produced by the communists or the Muslims, and you'll see that even a watered-down form of Christianity is still heads and shoulders above anything this world can produce. Okay? So, whatever the case, the Inquisition, many Bible believers were tortured and killed. So how come we have to... they constantly want to make us the victimizers when we were the victims. The Crusades, again, that was ordered by the Roman Catholic Pope. Okay? Now, having said that, though they got out of hand, I mean, things get out of hand when you have a children's crusade and children to get less time in purgatory start invading somewhere. I mean, children and invasions just don't seem to work. But whatever the case, originally it was started, the Eastern Church kept butting heads with the Roman Church, the Western Church. So eventually, about 1000 AD, they broke off from them. Okay? So the Western Church, 200 years later, could have said, you know what? The Eastern Church and their territory is being invaded by these cold-blooded Muslims slaughtering people left and right. God must be punishing them for breaking off from the Bishop of Rome. They're on their own. They could have done that, but instead, we know what they said? They said, even though we have our differences, they're our Christian brothers and sisters. Least we can do is help defend them. So the Crusades actually started as a defensive move. I mean, it amazes me. The New Tolerance, some way, shape, or form, the New Tolerance, you get a green light to talk about how evil these Christians are and how violent these Christians are, yet Islam is a peaceful religion. How can you say Islam is a peaceful religion after 9/11? And I'm grateful that most Muslims are peaceful people, but that's despite the violent teachings of the Quran, the violent teachings of the Hadith, another authoritative Muslim work. Yet somehow the Muslims are peaceful people and the Christians are violent people. Listen, I just talked about the Jesus Family Tomb. Always around Easter time or Christmas time, Newsweek and Time magazine, they're going to have a picture of Jesus on it, and they're going to try to attack the Christian faith. And Time and Newsweek and CNN, they're going to act like, and Discovery Channel, they're going to act like, we're so courageous because we're willing to stand up for the truth. They come up with all this kind of bogus speculation and slam Christianity. Now, that does not take courage. I was sitting there, me and my wife, we watched the Da Vinci Code movie, because I get asked to speak on that so much. Not so much now as I used to, for good reasons. It's dead in the water. It's gone. Whatever the case, you have. Now, I lost my train of thought again. Ouch. The talking about the Da Vinci Code, what was I talking about right before that? Time Magazine. They're courageous. Thank you so much again. With Time Magazine, they're acting like they're real courageous. When I watched the Da Vinci Code movie, they started mentioning all this anti-Christian propaganda they're talking. And I looked around and I knew that there had to be more Christians there than just me and my wife. And nobody stood up and screamed at the screen. And nobody threw things at the screen. You know what? I was proud to be a Christian. Because we are a very tolerant, a very kind people. A very gracious people. Even when we get slammed, true Bible-believing Christians, we take our Savior's advice and we turn the other cheek. Now, if Time Magazine, Newsweek, Discovery Channel, CNN, if they really are courageous, then where's all the articles slamming Muhammad during the month of Ramadan? I mean, let's face it, if Jesus had married a 9-year-old girl, the secular media would be slamming him left and right. But they don't slam Muhammad for marrying Aisha. Okay? So these guys are not courageous. They know Christians turn the other cheek. Okay? And that's what the new tolerance produces. The Salem witch trials, yeah, there were some bad things there, but the numbers are greatly, greatly exaggerated. There also appears to be, from some of the writings, some real occultic activity as well, some supernatural activity. The Holocaust, when the atheists say that the Nazis were Christians, that's a lie. It's a rewriting of history. But when the Christians say that the Nazis were atheists, we're missing the book. Adolf Hitler was not an atheist. He did believe in evolution, but he was not an atheist. Okay? The Nazis believed, I mean, just read the propaganda, school children, grammar school children had to recite and refer to Adolf Hitler as Messiah and God. Okay? This was neo-paganism. The Nazis believed that the Aryan race was divine. Okay? And that all other races were subhumans. Non-Aryans were subhumans. And they did not want the Aryan race to be polluted because they thought that the next stage in the spiritual evolution of mankind would come about where the Superman would evolve. And so what they needed to do was exterminate the bad bloodlines, exterminate the non-Aryans. The Nazis were searching for the lost continent of Atlantis. Adolf Hitler reported visitations from the Superman, appearances of some spiritual entity that would communicate with him. Okay? Really good book. It's probably out of print, like most really good books. Richard Terrell, Resurrecting the Third Reich. Check into that book when you get a chance. What he argues for is that the Nazi movement, the roots of Nazism were occultic. It came out of the German Thule Society, Thule, which was the German branch of Theosophy, founded by Helena Blavatsky, the Theosophical Society. You know, it's so occultic, Theosophical Society teaches that Lucifer got a bad rap from Christianity. He's really the light bearer that brings the truth to man that will set us free. The truth that man is God. And once we acknowledge this, it will bring the new age here on earth. You see, what I'm basically saying is the Nazi movement was the first time in history that new age type ideas were applied to a government and to a society. And right now, the new age movement is growing throughout the world, and it knows no borders. And, with Nazi Germany, you could depend on the Allies. There's no earthly power to trust in as the New Age movement continues to spread. Barbara Marx Hubbard, now leading New Age author, argues that we need to exterminate one of every four people on the planet Earth to bring about the New Age. What she's talking about, she says self-centered people get in the way of the New Age of peace and righteousness. But she defines a self-centered person as a person who believes they exist as a separate self from other people. So if you don't believe that all reality is one, we are all one, and man is God, you're a self-centered person who is the cause of all the wars in the history of mankind. So Barbara Marx Hubbard, I mean, you know, she's still a leading author in New Age circles. I mean, even Ted Turner, I don't even want to mention, Ted Turner wants to exterminate way more than one of every four people on the planet. I think it's up there like 80, 90% of the world's population because it'd be easier, more manageable, easier to control. I mean, so he's way out there. I don't know if he's missing a few cards in his deck or what, but Jacques Cousteau was another New Ager. He actually did the math, taking the United Nations, what their goals are for the world's population by the year 2040. He did the math and stated, you know, we need to be exterminating, you know, basically over 300,000 people each day. That's what the new tolerance and the new age movement is all about. That's where the Nazis came from. They were. Let me just draw this distinction for you. There's a distinction between there's pantheists. Pantheists believe Pantheists believe God is the universe. Everything is one. Well, there's otherworldly pantheists, and there's this worldly pantheist. Okay? Otherworldly pantheists, they focus on future, you know, reincarnations. So, like in India, if you're suffering, I'm just going to neglect you. Because if I help alleviate your suffering, I'm slowing down your attainment of nirvana. Okay? So I'm actually doing you a disservice if I help alleviate your suffering. This worldly pantheism, though, the focus is still the belief that man is God, the universe is one, but the emphasis is on bringing the new age here and now. And so it says, the new agers say, well, we have a higher view of man. Christians only believe man was created in God's image. We believe man is God. Yeah, but they view man as God collectively. It's like the human race is one big tree. So if a branch is dead and it's going to slow down the growth of the tree or hamper the growth of the tree, what do? You cut off the branches. So you exterminate the undesirables, and then maybe, hopefully they'll get a better reincarnation. But when everything's said and done, neo-paganism is going to lead to genocide. The only reason why Hitler didn't kill as many people, Hitler and the Nazis, as Joseph Stalin and the Soviet Union, they didn't last as long. If Richard Turrell is right, the New Age movement is going to bring basically Nazi-type thought on a global scale. There's going to be a global Holocaust. And right, but right now, as long as the leading view of the Holocaust in Europe right now is that Christianity led to the Holocaust, you're misdiagnosing a problem there. The problem in Germany was not the Christian church. The problem in Germany was the apostasy of the German leadership of the Christian church. They were the first ones to criticize the Bible and reject the Bible as God's word. So it's not a coincidence that the Holocaust began in Germany. Okay? And so this is a gross misrepresentation of Christianity. In reality, Christianity, you know, here we hold up the victim. Well, why aren't we holding up Christians? You realize, other than unborn babies, Christians are the most likely people to be put to death in this world right now. 160,000 martyrs each year. And it's almost always in atheistic, communistic regimes or Islamic regimes. Christians are being, like in the Sudan, are being sold into slavery. Christians are being persecuted. We're the victims, not the victimizers. Look at what atheism has done. In the 20th century alone, just China, the atheistic communism of China and the Soviet Union. Remember, China only came into existence, Red China, 1948, Soviet Union, 1917. And together, they killed almost a million of their own people during peacetime. The life expectancy actually goes up for some of these communist regimes during a time of war, because then they arm their populace. During a time of peace, they start slaughtering every potential political enemy and everybody who's come in contact with them. Atheism enslaves all equally. I mean, I've never heard an atheist say all men have evolved equally. Okay? No religious freedom. Islam. We're looking at the terrorism, the military conquest, no religious freedom, slavery in many other nations. You show me a country that's never been influenced by the Christian worldview, I'll show you a country where atheism is still the name of the game. Forget about women's rights in Islamic countries. One of my students from King's West is going to Egypt. She's in Egypt right now. She has to wear the whole garb. Otherwise, her life is at stake. We talked about the neglect of Hindu pantheism, otherworldly pantheism, and the genocide, the slaughter of multitudes from neo-paganism, this worldly pantheism, and this is going to making a comeback. Nazism is not dead, believe me. There might be a few different tenets, but in the end, they want to bring on the new age, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there. The real history of Christianity, it was Christians who built the hospitals, the schools, the orphanages. It was Christians who fought to abolish slavery. It was said by a talk show host up here that Western civilization, as influenced by Christianity, did not invent slavery. It inherited slavery, and when Western civilization came of age and applied its Christianity to the slavery issue, it abolished slavery. A world without Christianity, slavery is still the name of the game. Okay? And feeding the hungry, even the women's rights movement. You realize the women's rights movement was started by Christians. Now, since then, and I'm not exaggerating here, it has been hijacked by communists. There were anti-private property rights, lesbians, many of whom are also affiliated with the pro-abortion movement, and even Wiccans, even witches. Mary Daly is a case in point, a former Roman Catholic nun. She still teaches theology at theology professor at Boston College, a Roman Catholic school. She's a former nun. She's a leader in the women's rights movement. She is a practicing lesbian and a practicing witch. She's Wiccan. And but the women's rights movement was founded by Christians because they believe all human beings, all men, were created equal. By the way, when our founding fathers said all men are created equal, they meant they couldn't live consistently with it. They didn't live consistently with it. But when they said all men are created equal, they meant all human beings, male, female, and any races. If you don't believe me, just read the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Because it was a new argument that the South had developed to try to defend slavery, that all men being created equal only applied to white males. And Lincoln quoted from the founding fathers to prove, no, they meant all human beings. That's a Christian idea. Christianity is not intolerant. Probably the most intolerant belief system in the history of mankind is what we call today the new tolerance. It's getting bigger. It's getting uglier. I'm not saying we can turn the tide. I don't know what God's got in store, okay? But at least let's remind them when they persecute us that they're the intolerant ones, not us. Probably the most tolerant, loving thing that has ever been done is when God the Father sent his son to have his son slaughtered so he could bring to heaven some of his enemies, those who hated him with everything that we had. I mean, if that's not tolerance, if that's not love, I don't know what is. So when you tell your neighbor that Jesus loves them and that the only way to be saved is through Jesus, that's not intolerance. That's the most gracious and most loving thing that you can say or do to another person. I wish I could say things are going to get better. I doubt it. But just keep loving Jesus, keep serving Jesus, keep praising Jesus, keep preaching Jesus, because that's what it's all about. God bless you. Thanks so much for your patience.